and welcome to Gears of Resistance. This is a filler episode for the Steam Power Podcast, as Lisa is not feeling well this week, and we're already late as it is because things and stuff of life. So we're going to go ahead and do a new Gears of Resistance instead. And so we're about, I think this is what, fourth or fifth episode in. And thus far I've been doing a lot of YouTube videos with, kind of like how to's, kind of basic circuit theory. And, frankly, I mean, they're decent, but they weren't what I want to do. They were kind of, I'd put it me too kind of videos. There's tons and tons and tons of great videos already out there and podcasts, on, you know, circuit theory and basic electronic principles. And I really don't want to just be another, I mean, I'll do more of those, but I don't want to just be another. I felt like I wasn't adding anything. So I sat down and took kind of, you know, made some notes and thoughts on, you know, where could I add something potentially slightly unique? And kind of comes back to my little side business, Green Shoe Garage. And it's a, the way I like to describe it is we're a, embedded electronics or an embedded products, design studio. So what I tried to pride myself on is sort of creating rapid prototypes for people. So you come to me with an idea for a product, that is based on some sort of embedded electronics. And I, within a couple weeks, turn around a working, prototype. And that's really been my niche for the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm like, okay, well, how can I kind of take that experience and turn that into perhaps Gears of Resistance? So what I'm going to try to do is retool Gears of Resistance to be a predominantly an audio only podcast versus doing the YouTube videos, and turn it into something where we could talk about product interviews, people out there doing open source projects, a little bit about being a pro maker, someone who is, you know, starts off as a maker, a DIY hobbyist on the weekend, and then turns that into a, either a side job or, if you're real lucky, into a full-time job, becomes your business. And then we'll talk about open source news, both focus on hardware, but, you know, there's a lot of software stuff too. But it's kind of coming back to making products. So that's going to kind of be the focus. Now, every now and then I'll still do up a video for, like, if I'm working on a project, I think that's a very visual thing. So I'll do YouTube videos for, like, project demos. If we do a product review, I've got a new oscilloscope, a new function generator that I want to demo. So I'll probably do demos on those. Again, those will be videos, and then in the podcast. So the main podcast will be the audio. And in, if I'd made any videos since the last Gears of Resistance, I'll mention those and put the links in the show notes. But the videos are going to be secondary to the bi-weekly, audio portion. So that's the plan. That's in a nutshell how we're going to try. That's kind of like phase two. Because again, not that I don't mind just being another voice in the wilderness of embedded. I think though there's, like I said, there's a lot of really good guys and gals out there doing, you know, electronics 101. And given the fact that this is not my full-time job, it's not even like my second job. It's like really, you know, the podcasts are like a fourth or fifth or sixth job. I want to do the best I can do, given the time, and resources that I do have available. You know, obviously there's the day job comes first. Well, family comes first, then day job comes first and second. Then I've got the side business, Green Shoe Garage. I've got, you know, customer commitments there. So those three things really have to be taken care of first. And then pet projects, including the podcasts, So, you know, figuring out how to do the best, I want to do the best I can do given the limited resource, which really is time. So anyway, that's the plan. So to start with that, to start our first episode here, I'm going to talk a little bit about Green Shoe Garage. And pardon me as I grab a drink here. So about 20 years ago, I started off with my embedded electronics career. I started off as a research assistant, intern type at the Naval Academy, in their weapons and systems engineering department. And I got to work on, a few embedded electronics projects. And that kind of was like the catalyst for everything. So, fast forward through the years, I did some time in the Navy, active duty. And along, while I was doing that, always did things like, you know, set up computers, fix computers. I wrote software for people for kind of like, you know, for hire. You could hire me to write code. But because I was always moving and because I was always, well, mostly because I was always moving with a new family, living life, you know, a lot of the embedded electronic stuff kind of was pushed to the side because I didn't feel like, you know, lugging oscilloscopes, multimeters and all that stuff that takes, to do the hardware stuff with me. So for a few years, it was kind of more or less either, you know, IT services / software development, because really all you need is a laptop. As I started coming out of the Navy, settling down, decided let's take that back up. So a few years ago, I finally, got serious, did everything to set up a business. In this case, right now, it's a sole proprietorship. I'm actually in the process of converting over to a LLC or a PC. Since I'm licensed as a professional engineer in the state of Maryland, even though most of my projects, if ever, will ever require a PE license or stamp or approval or, I just don't know what the legal, so that's the process of that is an LLC is a limited liability company, which means basically you divest your personal assets from your business assets as a sole proprietorship. It's one and the same. Sole proprietorship has the advantage of taxes are just simply your personal income taxes. Well, whereas going LLC, or PC professional corporation, which is like, again, doctors, lawyer, mostly lawyers, I see PC and engineering firms. At the same time, it's the concept is a limited liability that your personal assets and your business assets are separate. If you ever get sued, they can't come after your personal assets. And that carry again, in the PE world, like in engineering licenses world, you have to carry things like, errors and omission insurance, keep your license up to date. But again, you know, I don't plan on working in the medical devices world. So I don't know if I really need to go through all that, but I'm exploring it because I'm to the point where, business-wise, I'm making enough on the income that I can afford to do the business expenses that is needed to set up an LLC. Like, I'm going through LegalZoom, which is, I think, LegalZoom.com, to do the setup. And then, once that's done, once the paperwork's done, you know, I'm ready to start looking at perhaps, you know, hiring someone to be accounting for the books, to an accountant kind of work. But again, it's mostly because I want to give myself, you know, not that I need it, I don't think, but I want to give that assurance that, you know, personal assets, business assets are separate. So anyway, Green Shoe Garage has been in, I called the business something else before, but Green Shoe Garage has existed, for, I think we're going on 5 years now. And then formally, you know, registered with, the IRS and the state of Maryland about 3 years ago when I really started getting serious. So anyway, that's the business legal mumbo jumbo behind it. So what is Green Shoe Garage? What do I do as an embedded products design studio? Every year I get, usually I'm taking care of maybe a dozen to two dozen clients a year. And sometimes it's, you know, three at once. Sometimes it's one. It depends on the complexity of what they're looking for. And I basically sit down and I really apply my systems engineering. I have a master's in systems engineering. So I try to kind of take like the Cliff Notes version of what I've learned and provide some sort of repeatable, definable, process where we sit down, the hardest part is figuring out the requirements. Like, what do you want your thing to do? and to help me with that, one thing I like to do a lot is eventually I will do like written requirements, but when I start, I sketch, I draw, I do kind of like storyboards, I do, use cases kind of things where I say, you know, here's a black box, regardless of what's inside this box. What are the interactions? What happens? What are the inputs? What are the outputs? And that's how I get to start start of my design process. It's a little different, but it seems to work, especially since most of my clients are not, they're technical, where they are technical, but at least they're technically literate, but the same app electronics isn't there. They're, you know, it's not what they do. So once I've gotten, you know, kind of the use case understanding, then I start drawing out, okay, so, you know, if you want something that, say, I want a ring on my finger, or I want before Apple Watch was invented, you know, something that when I detect that I've gotten, I don't know, enough UV radiation for the day to, you know, send some sort of vibrating, you know, vibration on my wrist or something, something like that. Something that could potentially have a mass market, appeal, but more than likely has a very limited, marketability, like mass production, mass marketing. It's more something that they want to build on a limited scale and sell on their own website or whatnot. So anyway, so once I understand the requirements, again, in a more visual, as I'm going along, I write them down. We vet the requirements. And then I start doing mock-ups and I try to go to, mock-ups or as soon as possible. So when I say mock-up, there's two parts to the prototype. There's the physical, either enclosure, how it's going to be assembled. And then there's the electronics inside that includes the hardware. And a lot of times if it's a microcontroller based, the software that runs on it. So first I kind of do in parallel, but because a lot of people tend to be tangible, and having something in their hand kind of spurs thinking and other ideas. I try to get a proto or a mock-up of just the shell pretty quickly so that they can at least have something in hand, mess with it, play with it, think about it. Then, or in parallel, I'm working on a breadboard concept. And a lot of things I'm doing now is with wearable electronics, and that's either I'm going to invent it or I want someone out there to do it, is the equivalent of a breadboard for wearable, because it's hard to, especially a lot of the stuff that's actually built to be a wearable prototype, like the lily pads or the Floras. There's no easy way, at least I'm not aware of it. If you know a way, share it with me, to just real quick prototype, like, other than, you know, clipping alligator clips together, and that gets bulky and doesn't really hold well. But, anyway, I digress. So do prototypes, do the breadboard stuff, show proof of concepts. Again, a lot of my clients, I'm trying to think how many if I've ever met in person. I don't think, maybe two, three. Most of my work is done over the internet. We do Skype calls, or now we do Hangouts. And it's all done and then Dropbox to share files. So it's completely, you know, it's a consulting. Yeah, I guess. Again, the thing should, I try to do everything like within, like we're talking, my timeline is week. Like I want to, from the day you hire me to when I turn around, if I go more than a month, I feel like I've not succeeded. I want to do, I'm not doing the final product. And I make that very clear when I work with clients that I'm not a manufacturing. I don't have, the context to do anything beyond, you know, getting a PCB made. I can get you to the PCB stage after that, and I can give you like a 3D printed enclosure. But when you really want to go talk to someone about, you know, I kind of hand you off, and I've got contacts that I hand off to do, you know, limited, you know, initial production. Like I want to get, you know, 100 units made. the concept is proven, the electronics work, the software works. At that point, I handed them off and I collect my fee and I'm done. So the nice thing is for the client is that I, you know, I don't take any sort of, I usually sign NDAs a lot of time. I don't think I really need to, but, because they're very unique requests, but understand that these people are entrepreneurs themselves and they want to protect themselves. So a lot of this is NDA based, non-disclosure agreement I do the design work for you. You pay me some amount of money, and then I'm done. I don't take any ownership in your company. I don't get any stock. Don't do anything. So the design is yours. You own the source code, the design files, anything else associated, is yours. I'm not aware of anybody that I've worked for that has become like a multi-billionaire overnight, but I've had some people do some fairly neat things and had some relative successful, products. But to get there, you know, to the breadboarding, we got the mock-up of the hardware. Once they're happy with that, we do like not too formal, but we'll call it like a 50% design review where we sit down and go, okay, really, at this point, I'm going to take off the breadboard. I'm going to either make a PCB. I'm going to, kind of refine the CAD drawings or the 3D printed files. At this point, to add anything new requirement wise, either we're going to have to incur new costs. I guess this is a good place to talk about it. Also a little bit about the funding of how I work. Again, part of this Gears of Resistance is I'm going to open the kimono on, you know, and I'm still learning too. I have no clue. I don't claim to be the expert by a long shot, but it's kind of like, okay, if you were interested in starting, you know, a business based on electronics. And for me personally, most of my stuff I deal with is all open source. I don't deal with, on the business side, I try not to deal with any closed or proprietary embedded platforms, software libraries, because it's too much. There's too much resources expended. You know, figuring out and, you know, a lot, it's time and money figuring out, you know, okay, I'm going to license this from you, but I don't know how successful. And I'm kind of a middleman for these people. You know, I'm not quite the guy that's writing the final product. So to make my life easier, to make their lives easier, all my client work is done on open source platforms just because all you have to do usually is, you know, you give credit to those who made it. And I make it clear that also to the clients that, you know, and this goes back to why I think it's kind of weird we sign NDAs, but I can explain to them, you know, as open source, it doesn't mean that, you know, that you can't make a proprietary product off of it. You can very well do so. Just realize that, and I point at things like, you know, here's the success of Arduino, Raspberry Pi, who, again, they're not all, the problem is for, especially the hardware world, it's very unclear where that line of open source kind of begins and ends, because there are non-open source parts, I think, on the Pi. At least that's what I think I was told. Someone in the know. And I'm not sure if that holds true for the Arduino. But the point is, you know, yes, there is a risk of someone, in Asia, usually taking your design, if you're really successful, and copying it. But my point is, if you're that successful, we have succeeded. So don't worry about it too much. Because it does seem, I mean, it seems counterintuitive that Arduino would work, but I mean, at the end of the day, and there are clones, there are knockoffs, but the Arduino brand has gained such, I want to say cult following, but a community where people do feel a sense of loyalty that, you know, they realize that, you know, if I don't buy from Arduino, the other issue with the whole legal stuff that's going on between the design side and the guy that may actually fabricate it. It's complicated. But anyway, so if we pretend like we were before all this legal kerfluffle of Arduino occurred, people recognize that if I don't buy from Arduino, they're not going to be in business long, and therefore, they're going to stop innovating. So here's the thing. The knockoff companies, all they know how to do is knockoff. They are not going to be innovative. They're not going to keep pushing the boundaries, making better products. So people recognize that, if I wanted to be around, if I want my stuff to be around in 5, 10, 15, 20 years that builds on top of Arduino or Raspberry Pi, there's a couple FPGA stuff, Papilio, I think is open source. If I want to do these kind of projects, I need to support, the original OEMs and not just the knockoff. So anyway, back to the point of tying this into running an open source hardware business, and how we fund. So, a lot of times there's two ways we can do it. We can either do, the way I prefer is just a fixed price. Like we sit down, we figure out the requirements, and I will quote you a price that includes, you know, me going to delivering to the point of whatever we agree on. So that frees me from having to track hours, which again takes time, which takes me away from doing your project, which means if I got to invoice you on the hours, it just creates more headache. So I personally try not to do any contract where it's, you know, $30, it's a little bit more than that. $150 an hour. Because it takes so much to manage that, and it detracts from the end goal, which is simply delivering you a final product. So most of my contracts are kind of fixed price. It's, if it takes me 60 hours, it'll take me 60 hours. but I will deliver on such and such date what you've asked for. If it takes me 10,000 hours, then I have to eat it. I have to deal with it. And that's why I'm very selective in what products or projects I take on. I only take projects that I really feel like I have the abilities, the capabilities, the tools, the technology, the skills to actually accomplish. And I think that's good for the customer too, because then, if I can't help you, I don't want to string you along. And sometimes by doing an hourly rate, you kind of feel strung along. But I feel like, you're being milked, just for money, and I don't want to do that. So by requesting a firm fixed price, that means that I'm committing to you that no, really, I have the ability to get this done. I've not aware of, cause obviously you have more people have asked for your service than you actually have clients. Cause eventually people realize, oh wow, I didn't realize it would cost that much. And so the project kind of dies, but I've had very few. And I'm trying to think if I've actually, has anyone actually said that? I think there may be like one or two where it's like, yeah, they didn't recognize the costs. But again, it is what it is. That's getting easier. And that's why, going back to my, rant on the open source is, because there are so many people building, what I call, or what's called breakout boards, for things like, temperature sensors everything. I mean, literally accelerometers, LED, companies like Adafruit, SparkFun, Seed Studio, that it makes prototyping just so darn easy. And then also to do final product, because all the stuff that they provide and the Eagle CAD files, and I do, most of my work in Eagle, it makes taking, here is these three different components that I basically integrated. Now you want all that on one PCB. Well, having the CAD files just makes it that much easier for me to put them all onto one board and then rip out, parts that are the excess parts. And then you're left with, here's what you need as your product. That integrates these four. And that's really where the value is added. And that's what I enjoy doing. Like I said, my hat's off to people that do things like Adafruit and SparkFun, because I don't have the patience probably, and maybe even some of the intelligence to just do the breakout board. Like, here's a sensor. How do I go reverse engineer the data sheet to say, create a, kind of like an API for the software, library. I create a breakout board where I've kind of figured out all the resistor values, capacitor values, to bias the circuit just right. They do all that work for you. And then I kind of come in and help people that have dreams of making a more end user, related product. And I'm kind of the middleman between those two worlds. And that's what Green Shoe Garage is. And, I love it. For me, it's what I want to do. And I leverage and stand on the backs of the giants that are the Adafruits, the SparkFuns, the Seed Studios, the Mausers, the, DigiKeys, the Jamicos of the world. it works for me. I think if I were to do, detailed design work at the individual component level, I would probably not be very, I wouldn't be very successful, nor would I be very happy. So, this little niche market I've kind of carved out, and there's a lot, and the nice thing is that there's lots of markets. There's a lot of opportunity in this space, because I can only take on so much workload a year. it's not like you can corner the market. There's so much opportunity. So for people out there, that are listening, you know, that's kind of why I don't mind opening the kimono up and teaching as I learn, because I'm a believer of the idea that a rising tide lifts all ships. So the more people are out there that can do this kind of work, this kind of, I want to say intermediate, but kind of like the last mile design, you know, the more people that are out there doing that, then people that want to pay for that kind of service realize it's possible and they will come to you and to me and, you know, capitalism prevails. We, you know, begin to compete on quality. We compete on price. And then everyone wins, because a lot of times with these products that we do make, you know, it's like, oh man, I want to build it because I can't wait to buy one myself. And use it. So, that's in a nutshell, Green Shoe Garage. And I think as we go on, if I ever do a product or a project where the client doesn't mind me talking about it, maybe that'll become like how-to videos, but not the traditional, like, turn your soldering iron to 700 degrees. And, you know, again, because there's so many videos already on YouTube. And not that there's that many podcasts, because it's hard to do just an audio podcast and that stuff anyway. But, that's what I want to do. So Gears of Resistance, open source hardware, pro maker, maker pro podcast. The journey of how one can become a pro maker, someone who, you know, either a side business or a full-time job building on everything that is being done in the open source and maker movement. So that's, hopefully this was a little interesting, maybe a little not, let me know. So again, going forward, I'm going to try to do some interviews. I'm going to try to reach out to people that are doing open source projects and do some talks, chit chats with them. And if you're listening and you want to be involved, send me an email. That would be awesome too. It helps save me some time doing research. What else? Part of, you know, also this is going to be, I'm a member of a local makerspace. We call it PAX Space down here for Southern Maryland. We have the Patuxent River. We have a naval station called, Patuxent River, hence the name. And so it's Patuxent is usually down here abbreviated as PAX, P-A-X, thus the name of our makerspace, PAX Space. At least I'm pretty sure that's what it means. If there's another meeting that I didn't know, I would be really embarrassed. But, that's another useful resource that, I should probably mention that and why it's so good to, join makerspaces, because the access to, like, for instance, not this was for a client, but, a couple months ago, I built a dollhouse, a just absolutely massive dollhouse for my daughter's, American Girl dolls. Like, literally she can fit like a dozen American Girls in this, and they're like 18-inch dolls. And, you know, so tools like bandsaws, table saws, drill presses, things that I used that I frankly don't want to go buy just to use a few times a year. I can go to the makerspace and use those tools. And so the point is, tying this back to the Gears of Resistance is, starting a lot, you know, and makerspaces encourage it is, you know, starting businesses that way. So joining a makerspace gives you two resources, the tools, the technology, but also gives you access to people. So, you know, if you run into like, okay, I'm an electrical and electronics guy, but I suck at software. There's a lot of good guys at software. There's a lot of good guys at woodworking that I just absolutely am crap at right now. So kind of more importantly than the tools themselves, it's the access to the knowledge and the people and the camaraderie. That's really valuable. So, again, that's another thing to encourage. If you're starting businesses, reach out, find a makerspace in your community and leverage that as a resource. Cause that lowers, that, you know, that lowers your operating costs. Now you don't have to invest upfront in tooling. Then you don't have to maintain the tooling, you know, not saying you go in there and destroy it when you use it, but, you know, because it's a community, you know, group that has a shared vested interest, you know, maintenance is good, you know, you don't have to basically, my point is you don't have to sit there and maintain it by yourself. There's other people that you can leverage their intelligence, other resources to help maintain and fix your tools versus you either doing it yourself or having to hire somebody else to do it. So, Makerspace is huge for starting a pro maker pro, business. And that's it. That's going to wrap up this week. I think I'm going on for probably an hour. I'm done. My mouth is parched. But let me know what you think. Gears of Resistance phase 2. We're going to kind of like hit the reset button and go from here. Appreciate any comments. We are still over at steampowerpodcast.com. You can send feedback. There's links to everything else we do there. That's where we're going to continue to post the podcasts for both Steam Power Podcast and Gears of Resistance for the foreseeable future. And, yeah, that really just, again, at this point, really appreciate feedback and comments. So with that, this is not an April Fool's, even though this is pre-recorded on April Fool's. This is true, real, legit. So anyway, appreciate it. Thank you all very much for listening. And until next time, stay quirky. Come on.